You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
It's a Friday edition of the Fenway Rundown podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo, alongside Sean McAdam, as always. And today, as we wrap up a busy week for one member of our staff, Chris Smith, we're going to dig deep into the prospect rankings he has blessed MassLive.com with over the last few days. Chris has run that series on the site. You've now heard three podcasts. And what is the final member of the trio of ways you can find our coverage, Sean? Please let the good people know.
That would be the Red Sox Insider Text Program, Christopher, which you can join by simply texting the word join 617-751-6257, then click on the link. You are afforded a free 14-day trial period, after which, for the low, low price of $4.99 monthly, you get to ask us questions, react to things on the site, contribute to the podcast, and all manner of things. So join us on Red Sox Insider Text.
On Wednesday morning, shortly before the news broke publicly, we gave our Insider Text subscriber a heads up. Subscribers, there's not just one guy, we promise. A heads up about the news that the Red Sox were dropping a Netflix documentary. That's kind of been probably the biggest Red Sox news of the week. Second straight week, completely off the field, if that's been the case. And that was met with some side eyes, I think. So I do want to start there before we get...
I would have gone with the word derision.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's, you know, young, old, whatever. The people seem to think that this is yet another kind of sideshow distraction, just like Theo Epstein was last week. For those who missed it, the Red Sox and Netflix have agreed to do an all-access documentary that'll chronicle the entire 2024 season. Starts next week with filming in Fort Myers. You know, I know there's differences. I know it's not coming out in real time. I do think an okay way to put it is Hard Knocks for baseball with a delayed release. You know, we've seen some of these Netflix documentaries. You guys aren't golf people like I am, but Full Swing was pretty good. Drive to Survive, the F1 series, all that type of stuff. Smitty, you're going to get a lot of run when we talk about prospects, so I'll start with Sean here. Your reaction to this, Sean, and what fans really should make of it, the awkward timing, all that.
Well, it's very hard to know exactly what we're going to get here because it is simply in the planning stages at this point. As you noted, the first filming won't begin until next week or the week after, as the team begins to report to spring training in Fort Myers. And the fact that there is going to be such a long editing and turnaround process makes it difficult to know exactly what we're going to get. I think one of the beauties, you mentioned Hard Knocks, Chris, one of the beauties of Hard Knocks is how quickly that gets turned around by, I guess there's some NFL Films involvement there, maybe, I don't know, it ends up airing on HBO, but some of that stuff is like 24 or 48 hours old by the time it shows up on HBO on that week's episode. So if someone got cut in training camp, you see that news being delivered 48 hours later. This is going to be months and months later. So it's hard to know what that narrative is going to look like. I think it has the potential to be very interesting. Anytime you get a behind the scenes look at the goings on with the team, I think most people are going to find that interesting. I think even the three of us who are around the team year round are going to see things that we don't usually see. They're going to have more access than credentialed media usually does. They're going to be embedded, traveling with them, sometimes following some of the players home. Those are obviously things we do not do. So I think it has the potential to be pretty interesting. My question is the lag time, and what does that do to the narrative, and how interesting is this, as Adam Grossman termed it, kind of an evergreen project where you're watching something that could be 10, 11 months old by the time you get around to watching it. That's what I'm interested to see how they handle.
Yeah, I don't think that this is for, you know, mainly or exclusively for your diehard Red Sox fan who kind of, you know, that they're going to watch that it anyway because it's going to come out next February. But I don't think the goal is like, oh, they made this trade in June, I can't wait to see how it actually played out in February. You know, I think it's more for a wider general audience where you get to know some of the personalities. I think obviously Casas, I would assume, is a big part of it. And, you know, we've seen these kind of stars, you know, not to go all golf fan on you guys again, but like, you know, a guy like Joel Damon on the PGA documentary, people, you know, kind of fell in love with because of his kind of quirky, you know, kind of persona. He's not the best golfer in the world. You two probably haven't even heard of him, but just watching Full Swing as I did, like, that was a big piece of it. And I think that's going to be part of it too. The one thing I will say, I think fans are really getting on the Red Sox, as always, for, you know, not having the foresight to maybe line this up with what projects to be a better season. I see both sides of that. You know, as we know, they've talked about this for a few years now, 2 or 3 years. They've talked about, you know, the possibility. There's been a lot of hoops to jump through. They had to meet with players last spring to get the approval and talk it through and what it's going to look like. They had to talk to guys who aren't even on the team anymore about it. And so it took a long time for them to get to this point. I do think, though, with that in mind, knowing that the microscope is going to be even more on them, that more people are going to see them, like, maybe there could have been a little more foresight into, well, the whole world's going to be watching. Let's be competitive in 2024. And I think your previous theory, Sean, about a potential disconnect between Tom Werner, the TV guy, the showman, and John Henry, who ultimately sets the budget, to me, it speaks to that a little bit. That's a little conspiracy theory. But, you know, it's just, it's not the best look that it's happening in a year where they're probably not going to be competitive. But when they started this project, they probably didn't foresee how 2024 would be going, you know, 3 years in the future.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that is a valid criticism that we've already noticed this week on social media is that a lot of fans would prefer for them to pay attention to improving the product on the field rather than the brand of the team, which ultimately is what this series is all about. They can say it's promoting the game. They can say it's giving a platform to players to promote themselves. But ultimately, this had to be signed off, in addition to the Players Association, by the commissioner's office and the Red Sox. And the Red Sox are the canary in the coal mine here. I would imagine they're going to try to do this on a yearly basis if it's at all successful. But Red Sox fans have a right to ask, while they're putting a lot of effort, or at least some effort, into planning this and having it roll out over the next few months, where is the attention and detail paid to the roster and making the team on the field better?
Smitty, you're going to have the floor for most of this pod as we go through your prospects, but your thoughts on the documentary and kind of the reaction to it the last couple of days?
Yeah, if you're going to have a bad team, which they probably are, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to finish last place, but they've finished last place 3 of the past 4 years and their roster, you know, on paper isn't as good as last year. I just don't understand why anybody would want to, you know, rehash that and watch it next February. I mean, if you were doing it in real time, you know, cranking it out like Hard Knocks, it doesn't matter if the team's good. It doesn't matter if the team's bad. Actually, sometimes it is better if the team's bad, right? There's more, you know, controversy and, you know, different things and stuff to overcome. But when you're then If they finish last, and even if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, if they finish fourth and don't make the playoffs, it's just like you're rehashing the year, 4 or 5 months after the season. I don't know why that's relevant, especially when you're taking it into next spring training where you're going to have new players and there's going to be people that want to put that year behind them and have excitement about that upcoming year, especially if they do more in free agency. So, yeah, I just think that it's interesting that, it's such a long, it's going to take such a long time to produce.
And those other documentaries before we move over to the prospect list, like the golf one, every episode kind of profile a different golfer. Some were winning, some were at the top of the game, some were not. And the F1, like there's a winner at the end. It's a different kind of mode than following one team where the result is going to be, the same. And I think that's why I bet that this is more geared toward the personalities, toward the grind, conflicts, all that type of stuff. From what we've heard, it's going to be pretty invasive. They don't have Final Cut, all that type of stuff. So something interesting, something that's going to probably change our lives logistically a little bit, having all those people around. Hot Mike Smitty, I think, is a dangerous game to play, but we'll see that start next week. Let's move on to the prospect ranking. Smith, this is a project that you have not done in a long time, at least since I've been at Mass Live, but coming out with your top 25 Red Sox prospects, it's been well received throughout the week. And today, as we speak on Friday, you put out the final edition, the final installment of those prospects, numbers 1 through 5. You started at 25 and worked all the way down to 1. For those who missed it, not sure how you could. Number 1 is friend of the program, Roman Anthony. Number 2, Marcelo Meyer. And number 3, Kyle Teal. Number 4, Miguel Blais. And number 5, Sadan Rafaela. So the big question, and I think the big question everybody has when it comes to Red Sox prospects and rankings and all that. We know there's a clear top 3, Anthony, Meyer, and Teal in some order. I think it's clear there's a top 2 in terms of Anthony and Meyer. But why did you give the nod after all this time, many years really, of Marcelo Meyer being the number 1 prospect in the organization and the best they've had in a while? Why is Roman Anthony the better prospect to you right now?
Yeah, so I think that when you look at it, he reminds me, Roman Anthony reminds me a little bit of Tristan, Casas, and his ability to control the strike zone, and he's going to strike out some. The strikeout rate might be 25, percent of his plate appearances. However, he's going to have such an extremely high walk rate as well that I mean that. He's just a complete hitter that can control the zone. Abreu's somewhat like that also. But you look at it and I think he had 38, like it's Salem before they promoted him to Greenville and eventually he was promoted to Portland. He had like 38 walks and 38 strikeouts. He consistently stayed around 19, 18, 19% wherever he went last year in walk percentage. So when I look at prospects, I like to look at, batting average more than just, certain. I like to look at strikeout percentage, walk percentage, batting average, on base percentage. But, when you look at him, you can look at like a Michael Chavis, like back in the day where, his strikeout rate was extremely high in the minors. And, so you could kind of tell like with the walk rate wasn't very high, right? So like when he got up to the majors, there was a lot of fastballs up in the zone that he was swinging and missing at. Roman Anthony, I mean, there's pitches that Tristan last year swung and missed at plenty of times. But he's able to control the strike zone, know where a pitch is that he can handle, lay off certain pitches. Use this, it's just such strike zone discipline. And, and Roman Anthony is rated by Baseball America as having the best strike zone discipline of anybody in the Red Sox system. So over Marcelo. Marcelo obviously had, so, when I look at that, yes, he's going to strike out a bit, but he's just got the ability to, there's, where some weaknesses like a Michael Chavis was not able to overcome some of those. He's going to be able to overcome it just by the ability to control the strike zone and everything. And so, I look at him and, I've talked to, some people, and then I've also asked, Chris Hatfield, who has Roman Anthony number one and Marcelo number two on Sox Prospects. Alex Speer did one where he wrote an explanation. I think that Marcelo, obviously, the strikeout rate and the numbers tailed off at Greenville last year after the shoulder injury. And so I think we can account for the shoulder injury as to why he didn't, hit that much in Portland. You can also account for the fact that he was like, 3.5 years younger than the average player at Portland. And so I still have, they're still neck and neck. It's not like this is something where I just think, it's an indictment on, Marcelo's year last year when he got to Portland, how he didn't hit, and he struggled and the numbers weren't there. I just think that Roman Anthony is a special player just because of his ability to strike, control the strike zone. He did play better defense than some thought he would in center field, and some project that he could stay in center field, long term in the majors. And, and he's got, he's got awesome power and everything. So he's got a very similar game to Tristan, I think. And so I would put him, similar offensive profile. I would put him number one because of that.
You referenced Anthony playing in center field. Where do you see, they're both middle of the field defenders? Obviously, Myers mostly played short, though there's some speculation that maybe he could play second. Anthony has played center, but he's also played a little bit of the corners. What do you think are their defensive ceilings for both players?
I think that Meyer probably has a higher defensive ceiling. I mean, you look at it and he is a plus defender, great range, good arm, just steady in the infield. He could play second base, third base with Story. Story could go back eventually to second base, and he could play shortstop. Actually, one of the top prospects I had, number six, was Cespedes. If you look at Baseball America, and they have a project in 2000, they have a projected 2027 Red Sox lineup, and they have Cespedes, who's just 18 years old now, as the second baseman, Marcelo at shortstop. They have Roman Anthony in right field, and they have Rafael in center. So I think that defensively, Marcelo's a little bit higher, but I think people were really impressed by what Anthony did in center field last year. And I think that as we saw with Mookie Betts, right field can be as valuable if he moves to right field. I mean, Mookie Betts was he was a center fielder playing right field, and so both those positions are equally important in Boston. And so, I look at them. Probably Marcelo has the better chances of staying up the middle than Anthony, but still, it's incredibly valuable to have somebody in right field too, with that has that defensive ability because of the space and more just a lot of things that are going on there. So,
Chris, as everybody who has ranked this system in recent months, even years, do not have many high-end pitchers in the top 25. I think you have, quickly looking, 6 or 7 out of 25, which is, maybe higher than even some other people do. The top 7 are not pitchers. In the top 15, you have 3. That's Wickelman, Gonzalez, Luis Perales, and Richard Fitz. All 3 have been in the news this winter. Gonzalez and Perales added to the 40. Fitz coming over in that Verdugo trade. Why are they in that order? Wickelman, 8. Perales, 9, and Fitz, 11. Do you see a gap there? And do any of those guys have the ceiling to be a good major league starter, or are the Red Sox as doomed in that department as they have been for the last 15 years?
So I think the most interesting thing with bringing in, Craig Breslow and Willard and all these guys, the driveline, baseball guy, and is that they are going to build this infrastructure, a new pitching infrastructure, and that should help guys like Gonzalez and Perales. And And with those two, you know, I have them eighth and ninth. They've got, you know, tremendous potential. Gonzalez, you know, they both throw 99 miles, 98, 99 miles per hour. They have, you know, really good secondary pitches that rank, you know, near the top, secondary wise, in the Red Sox organization among prospects. And, but, you know, the scary thing with both of them is walk rate, right? Like, you know, we've seen so many guys that they've, you know, said over the years is going to be the next, you know, big thing. And, you know, Darwinson Hernandez, I mean, he had so much potential.
Right.
If
And zero control.
what's that?
And zero control.
I mean, if you look at it though, like his first year with the Red Sox, Darwinson Hernandez, I mean, the batting average against was ridiculous, right? Like no one could hit off of him. He walked the house though. And so for these two guys, that why they have them like eighth and ninth instead of maybe fifth or sixth is because, you know, I want to see them, you know, get better command. And you know, that obviously is a thing with young pitchers. I mean, if you throw hard, a lot of young pitchers who throw hard, you know, don't have great command. A lot of guys who don't throw hard, you know, or the 89, 90, those are the guys with the really good command, but they don't throw hard. So, you know, it's you know, so, you know, I look at them as like, you know, they could both end up in the bullpen, or, you know, Gonzalez could end up as, you know, a Bayo type. But the difference between them and Bayo is that, you know, Bayo, look at his walk per, I don't have his walk percentage off the top of my head right now, but it was probably in the twos, right? Like in with Boston last year, he probably averaged like 2.4 walks per nine innings. And so Bayo, as a young guy throwing hard, has that command, whereas these guys don't have it right now. And I think that, you know, Breslow and all of what they're building, you know, it's to help develop those guys, right? Like, you know, and then there's other guys that I have and that, you know, that I think can benefit from, you know, this new infrastructure a lot. Like, you know, Hunter Dobbins, you know, like he has, I'm high on him. I think he's got really good stuff. You
Number
know,
20
he,
in the rankings, by the way.
yeah, and I think some people ranked him like, you know, Baseball America might have had him a little lower than that, maybe 26 or 27. You know, I just look at him as a guy that throws hard and get it up to 97. He's got, you know, good control. He's got, you know, several pitches. That's just a lot to work. You know, he was a guy that, you know, in 2021 coming out of college, before that, you know, junior year, some people thought he'd be a late first round or second, early second rounder. And then he had Tommy John and he missed his entire, you know, final year of college and he dropped to the eighth round. So this is a guy that they've got a lot to work with, right? Like a guy that can throw hard, that has good control, that has some good secondary pitches. Well, you know, maybe they were Breslow was able to get, you know, the most out of some guys that were, you know, top prospects in that Chicago system. We saw young pitchers in that Chicago system really take off. And so maybe he's able to get guys like that. Even beyond just the Gonzaleses and the Paralysis, with the highest ceilings, guys like that, you know, that you know can and I'd put Fitz in that category too, because
Yeah,
like Fitz,
that's my next question. So good job.
well, yeah, Fitz is interesting because like, you know, he was telling me at the rookie program thing, like, you know, the harder he throws, the better command he has. And I'm like, oh, you know, usually people you know tone it down a few miles per hour to rein in the command sometimes. And no, he has better command and throws it where he wants in the strike zone when he throws it harder. And he likes to be 95 or over. And, you know, so, you know, he has that potential with the, you know, as I said, the control is so important. We saw it with Bayo. We've seen it with so many, you know, guys that, you know, and we've seen it the other way, obviously, as I said, with, you know, Darwinson Hernandez and other guys that just can't, you know, figure it out control wise. That can mean the difference right there. And if you throw hard and you have good control, you know, I can see why a Fitz would be exciting to somebody like Breslow, you know, and why he traded for him. So, you know, so I think those guys right there should be interesting. And I am also working on another piece where just the fact that, you know, this is hopefully going to go in between my spring training stints because I want to talk to some people about this and drafting and developing talent, in the Red Sox organization. The Red Sox just haven't drafted many pitchers in the top three rounds at all compared to other teams. They didn't draft anybody in the first round at all under Bloom. I think they drafted one guy in the first five rounds or something over the last. It was ridiculous. And so, or maybe one guy in the first three rounds, but whatever, you know what I mean? They need to do that, and they need to develop those guys. So they've got some guys here, and then you've also got to get guys, some prospects here and really go at it with them and see, some guys in the draft. I think they need to draft high guys. So yeah, so I look at that's why I put, some of those guys like higher than other people have them, like Dobbins, is because I think he it fits maybe. Because I think they have the potential with what they're going to work with in terms of the pitching infrastructure that we hear so much about that they're installing.
Let's talk about some outfielders on the list here. A bunch of them in sort of the second half of the top 10. You've got Miguel Blaise, who missed most of last year with a shoulder separation. You have Zidane Rafaela, who we've referenced. Abreu, Willier Abreu, who is probably going to get some significant playing time. And then
Four
Jarren Duran.
400 plate appearances, according to Tom Warner, because he sets the lineup.
And Jarren Duran, who is obviously not a prospect anymore, but still a young emerging player, that's the heart of the outfield picture going forward, along with Roman Anthony. Talk to us about what you see with those guys, and then maybe if they have to make a trade to get some pitching at some point, which one is the guy that they should choose to move, and who are the three that they need to keep?
My concern going into this, I think that, I was actually debating over Rafaela and, Abreu, five and six, which one should I put higher? And I put Rafaela higher just because he has a, a humongous ceiling in terms of gold glove potential. And, he's led the Red Sox minor league system past two seasons in extra base hits. He had over, he had 54 extra base hits in the minors last year, but he had, eight more, whatever, in the in the majors last year. So each of the past two seasons, Rafael has had over 60, extra base hits, and his Gold Glove potential, his speed, in the ability to also play shortstop at above average level. So I feel like overall his ceiling is higher. I like Abreu though. Well, I like Abreu more because of that play discipline and his ability to control the strikes and the strike zone, which is incredibly important. I mean, I think the Red Sox have put more emphasis on, guys that can have high walk rates and bat to ball skills recently. It started with Heim, and we'll see if it, continues with Breslow. But, the interesting thing with this outfield mix, going into the year is, and I'll keep saying it, is like Tyler O'Neill has been on the IL, 12 times in six major league seasons. And Abreu, I talked to him at the end of the year. He's going to work on, strengthening his hamstrings, but he's had hamstring issues throughout the minors, including last year where he was limited to 80 something games, with Worcester. And so, you look at it, and there's two guys that, you don't know how healthy they're going to stay, be. And Rafael is probably going to begin, the year at AAA just because what we saw last year with him. The chase rate, I'll look at the numbers here. The chase rate was 38.8%. The whiff rate was 29%. The strikeout rate was 31.5%. And the walk percentage was 4.5%. In the minors, Rafael has only walked 105 times in 1,800 plate appearances. He's got a 5.7 walk percentage. And so, he needs more development time in Worcester. And these guys have, like, a guy like Abreu is probably going to get the job on the opening day roster because of, that difference in plate ability, plate discipline ability. So I think that, when you look at these guys and who they should trade, I think all these guys are going to, because they're thin out. I would obviously, if I was Breslow, I would go out and get another outfielder before, opening day. But because you're going to have Rafaela, who might not be ready, have to go if somebody lands on the IL real quick. And so, But you know, I think that obviously, you know, Rafaela is a guy that you know, you could sell high on. I mean, he's got you know, top he's on top 100 lists. He was just on Baseball America's top 100 list. You know, the stats that he put up at AAA were off the charts last year. But there's also those concerns about, you know, like, you know, not being able to, you know, having a high strikeout rate and not being able to walk, like just swinging at bad pitches. And so that would be a guy I would look to first to trade. You know, and Jared Duran, I think he has value obviously right now. And but you know, they need to keep, you know, certain guys too because of what they don't actually have, right? Like because they're so thin. But he's another guy that, you know, you look at it and he has potential to be traded. You know, just a lot of improvements he made last year, obviously. Like, you know, there was pitches in the strike zone. I think it was high strikes with him too, like that he wasn't hitting as a rookie, and that, you know, he made those adjustments on. And, you know, he showed better defense, better jumps and stuff. He still has a lot of room to improve, you know, defensively. Maybe that's a guy though that you trade if Abreu shows, like if he comes up and he shows, you know, what he can do. And you know, they have, but they also have to think about defensive mix, right? Like too, because defensively, I mean, Abreu's got a good arm. I'm not totally sold on his defense. They need somebody to play center field, right? And so yeah, that's why I would go out and get somebody else too. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go in there, but you know, I look at like Rafaela and, you know, and Abreu, and those are guys like that I, you know, are just really good potential, but you just don't know either.
Moving back into the infield, you have Nick York, who had been as high as top five on some other lists in the past. I think Sox Prospects has him at six. You have him at the end of your top 10 at number 10. Why has he slipped in your mind, and what do you project for him?
Yeah, so you know, I actually wrote in the article that maybe it's unfair to put him at you know, 10th, okay? Because you know, I mean, he actually last year when he got off to the strong start, he actually jumped back on to, I think it was either Baseball America's or MLB Pipeline's top, you know, 100 prospect list. And then he had a bad second half and he dropped out. Actually had a good August, but you know, overall his year was like, you know, I think it was a 768 OPS. And it's like what he showed his first year with the Red Sox, and it was, you know, it was I think it was his 20 or his 19-year-old season. You know, he came in and it was absolutely, you know, crazy what he did in terms of, you know, having a slugging percentage of 516 and having an on-base or an OPS of 928, hitting for power, 11.8 walk rate. His walk percentage got better as the year went on. He only had a 15.6% strikeout percentage for a 19-year-old kid, you know, that's in his first year of first full season of pro ball. And I haven't really gotten that much opportunity to talk to Nick, and I hope to get some at spring training because, you know, maybe he put more focus on the power, or, you know, on his swing, having more, you know, launch and stuff like that. Because we've seen the, you know, he Baseball America's ranks, there's has like, you know, for everybody that best control or in the system, best, you know, best slider, best fastball with, you know, position players, they have best batter for batting average, best hitter for plate discipline, and Roman Anthony gets the best hitter for plate discipline. Well, you know, the best hitter for average this year, and they just updated it, is Nick York. However, he hit 268, you know, that was his batting average last year. So there's a lot more in there, and that's why I put him at 10. Now, you know, as I said, that maybe is unfair to him because he's still so young. I mean, he's, I'm trying to look at it here. I think, yeah, he'll turn 22 on April 2nd. So it's like, you know, I'm looking at a couple years here, and they were in his 20s and 20 when he was 20 and 21, right? Like, And as I said with Meyer, like you're going against people that are a lot older than you, right? And so maybe that's being unfair. But as I said, the 15.6% strikeout percentage actually like went down his first year as his time went on. And his walk rate went up as his time went on. And he actually hit better at Greenville than he did Salem. And so his strikeout percentage over the past 2 years, it was 25% with his down year. And some of that was injuries, right? Like, in 2022. But it stayed at 20, it was at 24% last year. So for him to build up and get back to where I want, like that he could be on that prospect list, I'd like to see him hit for average like Baseball America says he can, right? And also, lower the strikeout rate and increase the walk. The walk rate's been pretty good, despite everything. But I'd like him to, because I look at him as a guy that, can make contact and hit the ball and bat for average. And I want to see that more than what he's shown the last 2 years. He got off to a good start last year, but he did struggle in the second half.
Smith, last one for you here. Just we know about the big time guys, whether that be Anthony or Meyer, Teal, Rafaela, Abreu. The pitchers are close. York's at major league camp. There's guys on that list who are going to make an impact in the major leagues this year. Probably one of the top three at least. We've seen Rafaela and Abreu in the majors, guys like that. Give me a dark horse. Give me a wild card guy. Whether you think, you always have these guys that you're super high on, like we joked about the last time you were on here, but like, who's the guy in this top 25 that maybe you have higher than a lot of people, or you think can be a legitimate major leaguer sooner rather than later? That, maybe Abreu was the guy last year, right? He was not ranked very highly, and we saw what he did in September. Who's that guy now?
So I look at not to down anybody's list. I mean, this is, as we said, Abreu, as you just said, Abreu was 22nd last year on, I think, Baseball America's list going in the year, and now he's sixth. It's extremely hard to predict what guys are going to do and put together these lists. And obviously, very smart people who have seen these guys, make the lists. And so, it's difficult. It's a difficult process. And so, but the way I look at it is that, so I'm not saying that, I criticize somebody for having, like Baseball America, for having David Hamilton as their 20th prospect. But we have seen David Hamilton, like he isn't as good of a defender as, it was made out to be. He obviously is an extremely good fast runner, but he really hasn't gotten on base to, help that, steal bases and stuff. And his offense, he starts good and it has declined each of the past, well, he's been in the system for 2 years and it's declined each year. So like I look at a guy like that and I try to look at like the 25 and the 24 and the 23 spot. Like I'm gonna use those on guys that have, more potential and I think higher ceilings than a David Hamilton. And so like I look at, Christian Campbell, who he's not as high on. I don't think he made the top 30 on Baseball
He's
America's.
40, 46 on Sox prospects right now.
But I think this is a guy that's going to zoom up because if you look at like Chase Mydroth, who was a fourth round pick the year before, he was the first guy in 2022 draft class to make it to Double A Portland, and it was because of his ability to hit, or his ability to get on base. He led all Red Sox minor leaguers with a 408 on base percentage. Even when he struggled at times when he went up to Portland last year, he was still getting on base at a high rate because his walk percentage was extremely high. And so I look at I look at Christian Campbell as somebody that has that ability, like Mydroth, who can, make a significant leap this year because he has that ability. I don't know where Baseball America gets these numbers, because if they're from who tracks these things in college, but Baseball America had his, Campbell's contact rate at 90% and 94% in the zone last year when he was at Georgia Tech. So this is obviously a guy that, has bat to ball skills. He's a little, I think he's what, 21 or 22. And so he's got some maturity from being in college. And, I just look at him as having a high ceiling of a guy that can zoom up. So maybe, he's high right now at 20 at 25, but you know, ultimately I think that he could be in the teens by the end of the year on some of these other lists. And so, you know, I look at him and you know, you also look at him and, you know, he was drafted as a shortstop. They played him a lot of third and second and left field even. And if you look at a video that Greenville put out, I mean, he made an extremely good catch in left field when he really hasn't had much experience in the outfield. And so, you know, he's athletic and he shows, you know, that ability to, you know, play multiple positions. And so I just look at him as a guy instead of like, if I'm debating over like him or Hamilton, well, I've seen Hamilton and I think this guy has a better ceiling. Actually, one of the guys that I was debating over, Campbell and Luis Guerrero for the number 25 spot, actually, you know, 24-25, Franklin, I think his last name is Arias, the shortstop prospect, the 24. Those were three guys that I was trying to fit into the two final spots. And I actually had, you know, at times I had Luis Guerrero on there instead of, you know, Campbell. And I think Luis Guerrero is an interesting guy that we can look at this year. He's going to be
a local kid, right?
Yeah, well, I think he went to high school in Florida and he was born in the Dominican Republic, but he did live in Hyde Park, I think, for a while. So, you know, a guy that throws extremely hard. I was looking at what he was doing, at Worcester in terms of fastball velocity. I think he got up to, you know, 100. And, you know, he's extremely interesting. And there's some secondary pitches there that are obviously interesting too. So, you know, I was looking at that guy as a potential 25 guy, but you got to pick somebody, right?
Right.
And, but that's like a guy that I would put on the edge there that could make an impact at the major leagues. The other thing with Guerrero though, too, is you'd like to see a little bit better of a command. You can get away with that more in the bullpen than you can as a starting pitcher. There's in the secondary stuff, I heard that there was one pitch that was kind of off last year. I don't have the exact pitch in front of me, but that was better in previous year. So, you know, I mean, that's how I kind of decided on the final, like, you know, last spots.
Well, Chris, that is obviously a ton of work that went into it. And readers at Mass Live appreciate it. It's a good series. And rest up this weekend as well after putting all that together. Sean, one more time for the good people at home. How do you text all three of us and get, in some cases, instantaneous responses, in some cases, vacation delayed, as I will be in South Florida this weekend and I will not be checking this portal, but you two will. And so people will therefore get to experience the Red Sox insider text.
And what you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, then click the link to subscribe, which is free for the first 14 days. And then an entirely affordable charge of $4.99 will crop up on your credit card statement monthly. And you'll think that is the bargain of the century after you exchange questions, comments, and supply material for the Fenway Rundown podcast.
All three of us.
I just have one thing.
Yeah.
Probably things that you pay for at $4.99 that you don't even know you pay for.
Right. That should be part of the ad.
All right. Go on. I'm sorry.
All three of us heading down to Florida for spring training in the next few days. Plenty of coverage from down there, but for now, this is our last Massachusetts-based Fenway Rundown for a little while.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.